From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Israel turns 75, and the ongoing negotiations of the must-pass National Defense Authorization Act. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Wednesday of this week, Israeli President Isaac Herzog addressed a joint session of Congress with a speech meant to convey the strength of Israel's democracy, while also emphasizing the special bond between the United States and the Holy Land. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about the speech was Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. Here's Tony Perkins.
Senator Lankford, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Tony.
First, your reaction today to the speech by Israel's president.
Yeah, clear, good speech. Obviously, the president of Israel is going to come and present Israel and our partnership and friendship. But he was really good about talking about, you know, the United States recognized Israel literally 11 minutes after Israel declared itself an independent country. The United States was the first nation to be able to jump in and say, we recognize Israel. We've remained in that very strong partnership, regardless of governments and presidents. We've remained in a strong commitment to Israel, rightfully so. And he came to basically say thank you for that and to say we do face a common threat that isn't a nuclear armed Iran. And we will continue to be able to partner together in our democracies. There's good things for him.
He also alluded to some domestic issues there in Israel, Prime Minister Netanyahu's efforts for judicial reform, which has been criticized by the Biden administration. Your take on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. The Biden administration's criticized Netanyahu over and over again and saying you're trying to interfere in an independent judiciary, while at the same time, Democrats in the House and the Senate are talking about packing the court and they're doing these new ethics charges on our Supreme Court. So literally, while Democrats in the Senate are attacking our court in the Supreme Court, they're also challenging Netanyahu, saying you can't speak ill of an independent judiciary. It's very bizarre on that. Quite frankly, Israel does have some issues they've got to deal with in their judiciary to make sure that it's clean lines. There are real boundaries and their judiciary just can't grab any bill, any issue, even if it doesn't even come through the courts. They have the ability to just be able to grab wherever they want to and to be able to speak on it. That's different than our judiciary, and it's understandable. Well, Netanyahu is frustrated there to say, let the legislative branch do their job in the Knesset, let the court do theirs. So he's challenging that. There's a great debate happening in Israel. That's the nature of a democracy. They'll get it resolved.
Is it our role to weigh in on that?
It is not our role to be able to weigh in on that. We are friends, so we can obviously speak as friends do, but that is the people of Israel to be able to speak in on the direction of the future of Israel.
You mentioned Iran and the nuclear threat there. I want to play a short clip of the president's comments today. Clip number four, please.
Mr. Speaker, perhaps the greatest challenge Israel and the United States face at this time together is the Iranian nuclear program. Let there be no doubt, Iran does not strive to attain nuclear energy for peaceful purposes.
Now, Senator, that issue has not been that it hasn't been in the forefront of the media and discussion because there's been so many other issues with Ukraine. But is that still a existential threat, not only to Israel, but to the United States?
Tony, 100% it is. The destabilizing force in the Middle East is Iran. Iran is the one that's using all their money to be able to pour into Hezbollah, into terrorism, to destabilizing what's happening in Lebanon, to destabilizing Iraq and their government, to what's happening in Yemen and the attacks in Saudi Arabia. All of that is Iran that's doing that. And a nuclear capable Iran would absolutely use that power against Israel. They've been very clear. Iran wants to wipe Israel off the map. And Israel's just saying, we take them seriously. When they say that, we don't think they're kidding. We think they're serious. And so they cannot be allowed to have a nuclear weapon. That has been the spoken statement of multiple presidents now in the United States. It's been the clear statement from Israel as well to say, we understand what a Holocaust looks like very well. We cannot allow that to be able to happen in this day and age from Iran dropping a nuclear weapon. And as Netanyahu often says, Israel is a small country. We are a one bomb country. If there is a nuclear weapon dropped on Israel, it wipes out the entire country. And so they take that threat seriously. We should as well.
So that said, Senator, the position of this administration, the Biden administration? Is it supportive of that view?
It is verbally supportive, Tony, but as you and I both know, we are nervous about what they will actually do at that moment to be able to defend our ally Israel and to be able to make sure that Israel has the capabilities that they need to be able to defend themselves. Israel has not asked for American troops. They've not asked for America to be involved, but they're asking for the ability to be able to help defend themselves. And that is something we need to make very, very clear to Israel, that we do stand with them in their own right to be able to protect their own people and their own sovereignty.
Senator, I want to go to another issue there in Israel, in Samaria and Judea. You and I actually, a number of years ago, we traveled there together. Among the first congressional groups that went into what's called the West Bank in the biblical area, we were in Ariel. And through your advocacy and others, we've seen these joint projects for medical research that have led to some pretty good stuff when it comes to cancer at Ariel University. The Biden administration has now put in place, withdrawn or overturned a Trump-era policy that allowed for this joint ventures, these joint efforts, all because this is beyond what's called the green line. Are you concerned about the steps that the Biden administration are taking here?
Yeah, extremely concerned about it, so much so we're actually working on legislation to be able to clarify that American universities and other universities can continue to be able to partner with places like Ariel University. MIT in the United States currently has a partnership with Ariel University doing advanced research there. This is not some isolated university there. 500,000 Israelis live in this area. And as you and I have both seen, and Ariel is one of those communities that's just a manufacturing town like we have here in the United States, that Palestinians and Israelis literally working in the same factories, in the same places, side by side, doing business together on it. And what this administration, the Biden administration, is doing is they're trying to discourage that. Quite frankly, that's something that should be encouraged, is that Palestinians and Israelis peacefully working side by side, rather than trying to diminish universities and research and manufacturing locations working side by side. It is a peaceful operation to be able to get more Palestinians and Israelis working together than it is trying to be able to keep people separate. So literally what the Biden administration is doing is changing the Trump policy, saying that they want to, quote unquote, support the Palestinians, but they're actually driving the wedge even deeper by doing it.
Well, the Palestinians like it because they have good paying jobs. There's peace there in that community. And so it's really bringing these two communities together. It's an economic development issue, but it's also, as I mentioned, it's most of this is based on science, medical science. And you would think the party of science would be all about this, but it looks like they're putting politics once again above people.
Yeah, we've seen that way too often, where politics is more important than people or science, and political dogmatism on things where they'll just say this is a Palestinian area, so we're going to isolate this and literally pull jobs, pull opportunity, and pull scientific research away from that area. That's the wrong way to be able to do it. We should actually be trying to get more people to do integrated business and to cooperate together.
Right. Well, Senator, I'd love to follow back up with you once you introduce that legislation so we can help you with that.
Thanks, Tony. I'll be glad to be able to have the help any way we can. And thanks to so many of your listeners and viewers on it and the way they stand for life and for the values of Israel.
All right. Good to see you, James. Take care.
Thank you.
Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. All right. When we come back, we're going to be joined from Jerusalem. Chris Mitchell is going to be joining us live. So stay tuned. Don't go away.
Now more than ever, Christians need to be prepared to articulate the truth of God's Word to our culture in an informed and loving manner. That is why Family Research Council's Center for Biblical Worldview exists. By applying the Bible and the historical teachings of the Church to a wide range of relevant issues, including voting, religious liberty, abortion, marriage, sexuality, and more, the experts at the center have provided resources to help Christians live by a biblical worldview, to understand why Scripture must be authoritative, and to equip believers to advance and defend the faith in the workplace, in schools, in their communities, and in the public square. Access free resources like the Biblical Worldview series at frc.org/worldview. To get highlights of the latest work of the Worldview Fellows, including their latest blogs, op-eds, interviews, and more, sign up for the Center for Biblical Worldview's newsletter at frc.org/subscriptions. The persecution of Christians grows globally every year and continues to become more aggressive and dangerous. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares the true stories from those who have faced religious persecution and takes a look at the heartbreaking circumstances Christians encounter due to the difficult and sometimes deadly hostility to their faith. Get your copy wherever books are sold or at frc.org/heroicfaith.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Good to have you with us on this Wednesday. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Be sure and check it out. Lots of resources there for you. All right, continuing our conversation regarding Israel's president, Isaac Herzog, his speech today on Capitol Hill. It's a fairly rare occasion for a foreign dignitary to address a joint session of Congress. Pretty big deal. So today's event highlighted the special relationship between the United States and Israel. But among the subtext of the president's address are the tensions that exist between the Biden administration, the Democratic Party, and Israel. In particular, regarding Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's efforts for judicial reform. So how were today's events received in Israel? How do they view this relationship and the tension that's there? Joining me now with a live reaction from Jerusalem is CBN Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell. Chris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you again.
Hey, thanks so much for staying up late. I know it's about midnight over there in Israel. So what was the reaction there in Israel to President Herzog's trip here to the United States?
Well, I think there were two reactions, Tony. First of all, I think there was across the political spectrum, I think there was unanimity about the speech. Yair Lapid, he's the opposition leader. He said it was good, the fact that that Herzog had talked about democracy and about the issues that Israel is going through with judicial reform. Prime Minister Netanyahu praised the speech as well, and he said that glad that the President Isaac Herzog had raised the issue of a nuclear Iran, and he thought that was very important. So I think generally the speech was well received by across the political spectrum here in Israel. On the other hand, there is that tension that you mentioned between the White House and the Netanyahu coalition and Benjamin Netanyahu personally. It's been 7 months since Netanyahu has been in power, and yet he's never received an invitation to the White House. They did have a phone call the other day, but even there, it's unclear whether or not Netanyahu will be actually meeting with the president at the White House, maybe at the UN in September. So the rift between the Biden administration, the White House, and the Netanyahu government remains.
So what do you think is driving that, and what do Israelis see as the real issue there?
Well, I think they disagree pretty strongly with what the Netanyahu government is doing with judicial reform. In fact, just in a few days, there's probably going to be a vote on one of the biggest measures of that reform, which is the fact that, you know, whether or not a Supreme Court justice here in Israel can actually strike down a law, whether it's reasonable or unreasonable. You know, that's something that we don't have in the U.S. Supreme Court. And so they're trying to rectify that. And ironically, some of the people that are opposing this legislation actually proposed that kind of reform several years ago. So there's quite a rift going on. And I think it goes on deeper, Tony, than just the idea of judicial reform. There's demonstrations that have been going on, some of them funded from international sources, for 7 months now. And it's not just judicial reform. There really seems to be an idea to try to undermine the current coalition government and maybe overturn it.
I want to ask you about that, but first I want to go back for just a moment for the benefit of our viewers and listeners. Explain the relationship between the president, Israeli president, and the Israeli prime minister.
Well, the president is really a ceremonial office. The one thing that he does have in politics is when there's election, he meets with all the political parties and decides which party can become, try to form a coalition government. But other than that, it's really a ceremonial office, and it's really the prime minister who's leading and governing over here. So to have Isaac Herzog, as great a speech as he made today, it's really not Israel's leader. It's really a ceremonial office. So there is a big difference between, the president over here and the prime minister.
Because in the past, it's been the Israeli prime minister. In fact, I've been in the chamber before when Prime Minister Netanyahu spoke to a joint session. So it would normally be kind of him that would be speaking on behalf of the nation.
Exactly. And that's what Prime Minister Netanyahu did back in 2015, probably when you were there in the chambers at that time. There's a sense by some people over here that the Biden administration does not want Netanyahu over there to make his case about Iran and other issues. And they would rather have him over here and not be in the spotlight in Washington like he was back in 2015. Tony, remember that many of the people in the Biden White House right now were the same people that were in the Obama White House back in 2015. And there really was a rift then between Netanyahu and President Obama and his White House. There seems to be the same thing going on right now.
Yeah, and he really captured the media with his speech. So back on the judicial reform initiative of the prime minister, how does the Israeli public take the United States that has its own issues? I mean, we've been having battles over the Supreme Court in the last multiple election cycles. How do they respond to us kind of sticking our nose in your judicial business?
Well, it was interesting. Senator Langford made that point as well. I mean, the administration and others are saying that, you got to take care of, you have consensus here in judicial reform while they are trying to change the character of the U.S. Supreme Court. I think a lot of Israelis prefer that the U.S. would stay out of the internal affairs of here in Israel. This was a democratically elected coalition government. A lot of people may not like the makeup, but it's really what the Israeli people have voted on. And I think they would prefer that they could settle their own issues without outside interference and pressure from the Biden administration.
Chris, we're up against a break, but very quickly, how can our viewers and listeners be praying for you and for Israel?
Well, pray for wisdom. You can pray for the peace of Jerusalem, and you can pray that Israel would be protected from outside influence. Right now, they have internal divisions, but they also have external threats like Hezbollah, Iran, and others. And pray for the protection of Israel at this sensitive and very delicate time.
All right, Chris Mitchell, we'll do that. And again, thanks so much for staying up late and joining us tonight.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right. Always great to see you. Chris Mitchell, and a great reporter. You should check out his stuff, CBN News. He gives a lot of reports from Israel. All right. Coming up next, we're going to get the latest on the National Defense Authorization Act that is over in the Senate. A number of amendments there. Democrats control. What does it look like? What's the timeline? What are the prospects that we might have a good NDAA? Senator Mike Lee joins us after the break, so don't go away.
Hi, I'm Joseph Backholm, host of the Outstanding Podcast, inviting you to join me as we discuss the news of the day and the issues that shape us. Yes, I know there are a lot of podcasts, but there are not a lot of podcasts that help you think biblically about the world we live in. Christians are commanded to take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. With that in mind, the Outstanding Podcast takes you behind the headlines to help you understand not only what happened, but why. So, if you're looking for something informative, casual, hopeful, and entertaining that will help you see what God is doing in the world and how to respond, the Outstanding Podcast is for you. We talk to people that you know and some that you don't know but probably should. And I promise that, like me, you'll learn something every time. So join us. Subscribe to the Outstanding Podcast wherever you get your podcasts or find it at WashingtonStand.com. It's not just another podcast. It's outstanding. I'll see you there.
Are you tired of worn-out talking points, misleading media bias, and hopeless commentary? The Washington Stand, Family Research Council's online daily news outlet, provides news and commentary on the most important issues of the day, all written from a biblical perspective. Get the facts with honest reporting so that you know how to stand firm in the face of today's biggest challenges. Stay informed, be encouraged, and stand firm in truth by visiting WashingtonStand.com.
What does Scripture reveal about the role of men? How can we faithfully and practically live out God's purpose to serve as provider, instructor, battle buddy, defender, and chaplain? To answer these important questions, Family Research Council's Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and Dr. Keenan Cureton released their book, Strong and Courageous, which counters the culture's labeling of masculinity as toxic and offers a way forward for men. Purchase your copy of Strong and Courageous, A Call to Biblical Manhood, at frc.org/strongandcourageous.
Welcome back. This is Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, as we were discussing, in fact, we took the entire program yesterday. Don't do that very often, but this is such an important issue, the National Defense Authorization Act. It is the measure that directs the funding and therefore the policy of our military. Well, last week, the House of Representatives passed the strongest version of the National Defense Authorization Act that I've seen in years, which essentially returns the military from the wokeness that we've seen invade in the last couple of years back to its core mission, to be prepared to fight and win America's wars if necessary. Now, the Biden administration has intentionally turned our military into a laboratory for woke social experimentation that distracts from the military's core mission. Now, debate has begun in the Senate regarding their version of the NDAA. Join me now to give us an update and expectations in the Senate chamber is Utah Senator Mike Lee. He serves on four committees, including the Senate Budget Committee and the Joint Economic Committee. Senator Lee, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Tony. Thank you.
So the Senate began debate on the NDAA yesterday, taking on amendments. Give us the latest of where things stand.
Well, we started processing amendments. We started casting votes. We just finished casting a vote moments ago. Senator Rand Paul had an amendment that simply asked us to clarify that the NATO treaty, Article 5 of the NATO treaty, can't take us to war. It can't declare war. It can't be interpreted to supersede Congress's obligation, Congress's power to decide whether to declare war. Sadly, that one went down. Only 16 Republicans voted for it. All Democrats and the remainder of the Republicans voted against it.
Wow.
We're processing other amendments today, tomorrow, and into next week.
So let's get your thoughts on the House version of the National Defense Authorization Act.
Yeah, so the House version of the National Defense Authorization Act is terrific. It's not a perfect document, as pretty much no bill is, but it achieves some major gains. One of the more significant gains, one of the gains that I'm most pleased about, is the fact that they passed language in the form of an amendment that was still part of the bill when they passed it, that ends the Department of Defense policy, violating at least the spirit, if not also the letter, of 10 U.S.C. Section 1093, which prohibits the use of U.S. military funds, Department of Defense funds, for abortions. And you know, we've got this policy right now in which the Department of Defense is being too cute by half and trying to skirt that law by saying that they're going to pay for abortion-related travel and leave time. If someone in the military wants to get an abortion in a neighboring state, all they have to do is indicate as much, and they can receive 3 weeks of paid leave time and have all their travel expenses reimbursed by the United States government. This isn't right, and the House version of the NDAA undoes that.
That was never the case before. That's never happened before.
No, no, it's never happened before, in part because people who ran the Pentagon were appropriately focused on fighting wars and protecting America's national security, not on a woke agenda.
But wouldn't you also say that they abided by the law? I mean, you made reference to the section of law that restricts the expenditure of government funds to facilitate abortion.
See, when you're focused on America's national security, you're also going to abide by the law rather than looking for ways to flout the law, to skirt the law, which is exactly what they're doing with this barbaric policy. So I applaud the House of Representatives for sticking to its guns and for taking that authority away.
So
I hope we can keep it in the bill.
What's the way forward in making sure that is in the final version of the NDAA?
Here's the funny thing, Tony. So the version of the NDAA that we're considering in the Senate this week is completely different than the House version of the bill. I'm not sure why we're doing it that way. That's the way Chuck Schumer decided to bring it up. Ordinarily, if the House had already acted, I would think we should start with the House version, but we're not doing it that way. What's going to happen now is that the Senate will work on its version of the bill. And once it's done, then it will probably go to a conference committee where there are conferees, as they're called, key members of both chambers appointed to serve on a committee that decide which provisions passed by the House and which provisions passed by the Senate will become part of the final negotiated deal.
So as you just described this amendment by Senator Paul that did not pass, and the threshold I've seen thus far for the amendments has been 60 votes, it's unlikely that if the Senate tries to push these same types of votes, Republicans, that they would pass. So would it not be the best approach to have Senate Republicans stand with what the House did and let them slug this out in conference?
Yes, that's my view, and I believe that's the view of the overwhelming majority of my Republican colleagues in the Senate, which is there's a huge win in the House. Knowing that the Democrats control the Senate, they have a majority in the Senate, it would be dangerous and counterproductive for us to take up that same amendment here, knowing that it is likely to fail. And it's likely to fail whether they set the vote at a simple majority threshold or at a 60-vote threshold. Either way, the Democrats are going to have enough votes in order to defeat it. It's better to go into the conference committee posture in a situation where the House has passed something but the Senate hasn't taken it up than it is to go into it under the posture that the House has passed something and the Senate has voted it down. Yes. And so that's why it's unlikely to come up in the Senate version at this stage of the consideration.
Senator Lee, anything that our listeners and viewers should be doing right now? Very quickly, we're up against a break, but anything we should be doing?
Viewers should be making sure that they support Senator Tuberville and that they call their home state senators and encourage their home state senators to support the heroic stand taken by my friend and colleague, Senator Tommy Tuberville, who has been standing up for the law.
Yeah.
He's been standing up for unborn human life and taking a position that's drawn him a lot of criticism, including, sadly, some criticism from among Senate Republicans. Friendly fire that doesn't feel so friendly.
Senator, great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.